Okay, morning, everyone. Today's daf is daf Nun Zayin in Psachim. God willing, today we're going to finish the fourth parak of Psachim. We're back on Nun Vav. Let's go back to Nun Vav Amud Aleph towards the bottom. The number is six. Six things that were done by Anshei Yericho. Six things that were done by Chizkiah. Some of them were most of them were controversial. Some of them were so controversial that the Chachamim of that generation protested. So we're back to Yericho. We're going to discuss some of the oddities, some of the more questionable behavior of Anshei Yericho. Tana Rabbanan, we're going to go over a Tosefta. Most of this information we already saw back in the Mishnah, so a lot of this is going to be reviewed from yesterday. We're on Vav Amud Aleph, we're two-thirds down on the Amud. Tana Rabbanan, Shisha Dvar Mansu Anshei Yericho. Six things that were done by the members of Yericho, the city of Yericho. Shlosha Beratzon Chachamim, Shlo Beratzon Chachamim. Now, three of them were done with permission, with rabbinic permission. Three of them were done without rabbinic permission. Now, right away, you can tell that there's a subtle difference between the Tosefta that we're learning right now and the Mishnah that we learned yesterday. In the Mishnah we learned yesterday, of all six behaviors of Anshei Yericho, all of them were shunned by the Chachamim. It's just a question of which ones the Chachamim were going to be in open protest to. This Tosefta has it that three of them, the Chachamim, were actually in accordance with. They liked it. So that's the difference between the Tosefta we're learning right now and the Mishnah, but you'll see in just a moment. Our Tosefta brings down two opinions. This is the first of two opinions within the Tosefta. This is the opinion of, I believe, Rabbi Meir. Yes, of Rabbi Meir. So stay tuned as we're going to see the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, and you're going to see that our Mishnah really follows the position of Rabbi Yehuda. And these are the things that are done with rabbinic approval. Markivan dekalim kol hayom, the entire day of the 14th of Nisan, which is a day where really work should not be done after midday. Work should not be done mederech din in the morning because of minug. Work should not be done, but either way, they grafted the entire day of the 14th day of Nisan. V'korchin es hashma, they bundled the shema together that we discussed at length yesterday. What exactly that means? Three possibilities in the Gemara. What exactly bundling the Shema means? V'kotzen lifnei ha'omer, and they would harvest before the Omer. These three activities were done with rabbinic approval. At least that's the opinion, the first opinion in this Tosefta. V'elu shelo baratzu chachamim, and things that were done without rabbinic approval, goshen lifnei ha'omer, they would not just harvest the wheat before the Omer, but they would heap it in a pile. Now already that's going too far, because as we discussed yesterday, the harvesting that you do before the Omer, those grains are not permitted. It's also in the Torah, it's called Chadash. So those grains are not permitted. So just simply cut them off the ground, that in of itself is fine. But now you're heaping it in a pile, and now the just bringing the chances of eating it even closer, so already that's not right. They did it, the Chachamim didn't approve of it. Uparts and parts begi no sehem. Upardiso sehem. Lahachal nesher la'aniyim bishne bitzaras. Bishabasos v'yamim tovim. I know that's a mouthful. What they would do is they would open up the gates of their fields so that the poor people would come into the fields and be able to eat during years of famine. That sounds really nice. Doesn't sound like a bad thing. The problem is that they allowed the poor people to eat fruit that fell off the tree on Shabbos. Now, there's a lot of problems with that. There's a lot of muksa issues with that. Also, the concern that maybe you're going to climb the tree in order to get the fruit. So we'll talk more about that a little bit later on this morning. The problem is that it's not that they fed the poor people during famine years. That's a good thing. It's the way they did, the method they did it, which we'll talk more about later on this morning. Omatirim gimzio shel hekdesh, shachruv v'shal shukma. And the other thing they did is sycamore trees, which were dedicated to the Beis HaMikdash. So their rationale was, look, the trees themselves belong to the Beis HaMikdash. Obviously, we're not going to misappropriate the trees, but the branches, those are new branches that are grow off the tree, that doesn't belong to the Beis HaMikdash, so they cut it for themselves. That's what their thinking is. The Chachamim don't agree with that thinking. The Chachamim are of the opinion that the shoots that come off the trees also belong to Hekdesh as well. Again, we're going to come back and discuss that a little bit later on this morning as well. Divrei Meir, this is all the opinion of Rabbi Meir. So again, Tosefta, viewpoint number one, unlike our Mishnah, is that they did six things. Of the six that they did, three of them with rabbinic approval and three of them without rabbinic approval. Amar Rabbi Yehuda, so the Tosefta brings in the second opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, says to Rabbi Meir, Imberatzon Chachamim Hayos, and you call out the Mosenkein. What do you mean? If the first three things they did on the list was with rabbinic approval, so why Anshei Yericho? Meaning this should be acceptable behavior by everybody. Rav Yehuda says, no, everything was done without rabbinic approval, and it's just a question of whether it was over the line, too much over the line, or just a little bit over the line. So, and it's just a question of what got the Chachamim to protest. Chachamim weren't happy with any of these activities, but of the three, too far over the line, and the Chachamim protested. And now, Rav Yehuda is going to go over his list. Now, in his list, it's basically going to be the same list of six. It's just going to be an explanation of all six are not appropriate behavior. It's just a question of a little bit inappropriate versus very inappropriate. So, Markivan Dekalam Kol Hayom. So again, the first three, yeah, very similar to what we just discussed. They would be grafting trees all day on the 14th day of Nisan. V'korchen es hashman, they would bundle the shema. V'kotz v'gozchin lifnei ha'omer. And they would harvest and heap before the Omer, before the second day of Pesach. Ve'elu shemichu biyadam. Now here's the list of three things they did, which were reproachable. They got reproached for it. Matirin gimzio shel hekdesh shel churo v'shel shikma. Those sycamore trees, they helped themselves to the branches of the sycamore trees, even though the trunks belong to the Beis HaMikdash. Uparts and prasos begino sehem, pardos sehem le'echel neshalani, and b'shabasos v'yamim tovim, b'shnei b'tzaros. And again, they would open up their fields so that the poor people could go onto the fields and eat during the famine years, but what they would give the poor people to eat were the fruit that fell off the tree on Shabbos. And finally, nos nepeh ala yarek. And the last thing they would do is they would dedicate a corner of the field, of the vegetable field, as peah, where the poor people can come onto the corner and eat from that corner of the field. Again, sounds like a good thing, as we'll discuss in just a moment. It's not a good thing, it's a bad thing. Umichu biyadam chachamim. Now, in these last three things, they were very inappropriate, and therefore the Chachamim gave them a reprimand for these last three things. Now, just a couple of small points, and then technical points, and then we'll discuss the larger issues of the Braisa. Now, the Gemara notes that, according to Rav Yehuda, harvesting before the Omer is a bad thing. In other words, that was one of the six things that Anshei Yericho did, which, even though they weren't reproached for it, but nevertheless, it was a bad thing. But meanwhile, we have a Mishnah Menachos Vahatanan. Anshe Yerichu Kotzun Lifnei Omer Beratzon Chachamim V'goshim Lifnei Omer Shalom Beratzon Chachamim V'lo Miichu Biyadam Chachamim. The Anshe Yerichu, they would harvest before the Omer, and the Chachamim said, that's fine. And they would heap the harvest. In other words, they would put it into piles before the Omer, and the Chachamim said, that's already too much. That's too far. You gone too far, and they got reprimanded for that. I'm sorry. On the Gochim, on the Gedisha, the Chachamim did not give them actual rebuke. Now, Man Shamalei Damar Michu V'lo Michu, Rabbi Yehuda. Now, who is the author of this Braisa? It's got to be Rabbi Yehuda. It can't be Rabbi Meir, because Rabbi Meir believed that this was something that was done with rabbinic approval. So v'ketani kotzim brasam chachamim. So, and meanwhile, it says in the Mishnah, we just learned in Menachos, that they were kotzer and the chachamim were fine with that. So the Gemara says, fine, v'ketani kotzim brasam chachamim v'latamech, the top of nunvavam and beis, hani arba havu ela samim ikan ksira. So the Gemara says, fine, so what we're going to do is just going to do a small editing of the Braisa. The word ketsira in the Braisa, we're just going to take it out. So in other words, harvesting before the Omer, that's fine. There's no problem with that. You're allowed to cut the grains before the Omer. What you're not allowed to do is any more processing, meaning to now put it in a pile before the Omer. Now we're just getting closer and closer to eating the grains. That you're not allowed to do. To harvest it is fine, but to put it into piles and to heap it into piles, that you're not allowed to do. And so therefore, Anshe Yericho, the Ketzira they did, not over the line. The Gedisha they did, that went over the line. That was inappropriate. Eventually they will. But the problem is, right now, right? Correct. But still, in other words, it's chadash. In other words, before the tevel issue, it's chadash. It's prohibited from that standpoint. Okay. Umatirin gimzio shel hekdesh shel churo v'shel shikma. Now, one of the things that were done by Anshe Yericho, and this was an affront, this was totally inappropriate, is that the trees, the sycamore trees in the city of Yericho belonged to Hekdesh, dedicated to Hekdesh. What they did is that any of the new branches that grew off the tree, they helped themselves too. So, lo hikdishu el, I'm sorry, amru. And this is now what they said, meaning we're going to go through the rationalization of the members of the city of Yericho. What were they thinking? So their thinking, their thought process was, our forefathers only dedicated the trunks of the tree to the base of Mikdash. Because look, this growth over here, this came after the fact, meaning this is we're at a later generation, and these branches over here were not part of the original tree. That's new growth. And we're of the opinion that there is no Isser of Me'ila by growth. Meaning the Isser of Me'ila, which we spent already in Masechta talking about a couple months ago. No, well over a year ago. But the Isser of Me'ila is taking something belonging to the Hekdesh and getting benefit from it. And the Torah says that that's not only stealing, it's called Me'ila, where you have to make full restitution, plus you have to add another 25%, plus you have to bring a karban if you're Mol Behekdesh. And so they're of the opinion that there is no Isser of Me'ila of the growth, meaning that the Isser of Me'ila is only on the original product, but any of the growth, any derivative, is not going to be subject to Me'ila. V'Rabbanan Savre, that's the Anshe Yericho. Fine, that's their position. And the Chachamim, who obviously disagreed, what do they say? Nehid de Me'ila Leika Yisro Me'ika. Look, we actually agree with you. Meaning there is no Isser of Me'ila, but it still belongs to Hekdesh. Meaning that there are, and we see this distinction over and over again. Meaning even though there may not be a formal Me'ila prohibition, but it's still theft. It still belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. In other words, to qualify for it to be Me'ila, it needs to have a certain threshold. It needs to have a certain definitions. In other words, only the original item which was Mukdash, which was sanctified to the Beis HaMikdash, that's subject to Me'ila. And the growth of that item or any offshoots of that item is not subject to Me'ila. Fine. But it still belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. And still violating the Isser of, not Me'ila per se, but stealing from the Beis HaMikdash. It's still Hekdesh. And so therefore the Chachamim said to the Anshe Yericho, you can't do that. You can't take the branches, even though the branches are new growth, and even though we actually agree with you, it's not subject to the Isser of Me'ila. Okay, now we are up to the next thing that were done by Anshe Yericho, which was which they got muster for, and that is they opened up the gardens to the poor people so they can come in and eat the fruit off the trees on Shabbos. Now, uports and process. Amr ulam Rabbi Shimon Malakish machlokes b'shamach beidos. Now, where are these fruit on the trees? Now, first of all, we all understand. If the fruit is actually attached to the tree, there's nothing to talk about. Meaning to detach a fruit from the tree on Shabbos, that's an Issur D'oraisa, that's tolesh. So that is ripping off something off growth. It's tolesh, it's kotzer, however you want to, right, you can argue. But anyway, but that in of itself, there's nothing to discuss. We're talking about fruit that naturally detached off the tree. And in Yericho, they felt the poor people can take this fruit, even though it fell off the tree on Shabbos. So the Gemara now is going to try to describe and qualify where is the point of disagreement between the members of Yericho and the Chachamim who disagree with them. So Amar Ulam Rabbi Shimon Malakish, Machlokes B'Shamach Beidos. The argument over here is regarding fruit in the tree that are in the upper part of the tree. Now the Gemara describes it as Machbeidos. If you look, take a look at Rashi. Kapos Tamarim Hein Berosh HaDeko. It's at the very top of the palm tree. Ukafufu Zuet Sozu Kein Kli Kishat Tamarim Noshrim Mekabla Sosam. And when the dates fall off, these leaves, these big fronds, basically catch the fruit falling off. So where are you going to have to go in order to get this fruit, these dates? You're going to have to actually climb the tree. Now, climbing the tree, we learned back in Masechta Shabbos, that's a no-no. That's a violation. That's a rabbinic violation. So, B'Shamach Beidos, the Rabbanan, Savri Gazer, and Shama Yala V'Yidlosh. So the Chachamim said, you can't get those fruit. In order for you to access those fruit, you're going to have to climb the tree. You're not allowed to do that. That's a rabbinic prohibition on Shabbos. The Anshe Yericho Savit Lo Gazrin and Shema Yala V'Yitlosh, and the Anshe Yericho felt that there's no gzera. Now, who these Anshe Yericho are? Meaning, we don't normally right? They don't seem to be a band of Talmid Chachamim. They don't seem to be a band of Tanaim. In other words, what are they based on? It's interesting. Previously, the Gemara says, hey, hold, there's no Me'ila Begidulim, which the Gemara acknowledges that's a Shita, meaning there are those people who subscribe to that. This idea, oh, we don't hold this as a rabbinic ban, meaning it's funny, who are they that they don't hold like that? But okay, they don't hold that way. Now, but if the fruit are at the base of the tree, where there's no need to climb up the tree, according to everybody, would be mutter. Now, the question which should be on everybody's mind, which is the very next line of the Gemara, Amalei Rava v'hamuksos ninu. So Rava says, okay, yeah, I know you don't have to climb the tree, but those fruit were attached to the tree going into Shabbos. They fell off the tree on Shabbos. So you know what those fruit are called? Those fruit are called muksa. Classic example of muksa. Because there are many definitions of muksa. There are many categories of muksa. But over here, what kind of muksa are we talking about? Right? It's muksa machmas iser. Meaning, in order for me, when Shabbos begins, let's go right to the beginning of Shabbos. If I wanted to get this fruit, what would I have to do? I'd have to rip the fruit off the tree. So in other words, the only way I could gain access to this is through an Isser. So therefore, even if the fruit fell off the tree on Shabbos, but still, there's a muksa status to the fruit. It's muksa machmas Isser. So Rava says to Ula, even if the fruit fell to the ground, but if they were connected before while Shabbos began, the fruit are muksa. So how can we even entertain this idea that everyone's okay with the fruit that's on the ground? No way. Let me do that a little bit slower. So the Gemara's suggestion is, well, it's not muksa because the ravens can gain access to it. Meaning, even while connected to the tree, don't give it a muksa status, because the birds will come, and the birds will come and take the fruit, take the dates. Right. Well, yeah. The we talked about this back in Shabbos. The even though animals have to be shomer Shabbos, but you don't have to stop your animals from ripping grass off the ground, right? Tosos discusses in Shabbos somewhere in the beginning of the Kufs. Anyway, point's very simple. You don't have to stop your animal from ripping grass off the ground. Meaning you can't burden your animal, but the animal's allowed to eat. And in this case, the ravens themselves also can go to the top of the tree and eat the dates. So the argument the Gemara now wants to give us is, well, since the dates are muchan for ravens, so they're also muchan for us as well. That's the argument. So the Gemara says that's a difficult argument. Hashta muchan la'adam la'have muchan la'klavim. Now we know in terms of muksa and muchan on Shabbos, if let's say something is fit for human consumption, and for whatever reason, which we're going to describe in just a moment, humans can't eat it anymore. Okay, give it to the dog. No, we didn't set it aside for dogs. So in other words, did not, and we learned in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, im lo yisan avel me'er Shabbos asul lefi she'ena min ha'muchan. So if it wasn't an avail before Shabbos, meaning, the case over here is really simple. You have an animal, right, a cow, it dies on Shabbos. So now it's a nevela. Now, in other words, it didn't receive a shechita. Okay, so what do I do with nevela? Dog food. Basically, nevela becomes dog food. So give it to the dog. The problem is here, is that going into Shabbos, I didn't have this animal earmarked for dogs. Meaning the animal I was going to eat. Now, I understand. In other words, going into Shabbos, I can't shecht it on Shabbos. But, and by the way, it could be that we're talking here not about Shabbos, we're talking about Yontif. Okay, that makes it easier. The point is that going into Shabbos, going into Yontif, I was planning on eating this animal. And the animal died on Yontif, and now, oh, just give it to the animal? No, it wasn't set aside for the animal. So if something is earmarked for human consumption, I can't reassign it on Shabbos for or Yontif for animal consumption. So if that's true regarding going from human to animal consumption, one can only imagine. Muchan la'orv and have muchan la'adam. So now if something is fit for animal consumption, now on Shabbos, on Yontif, I can reassign it for human consumption? So Amar Leh, so he says, you know, that's not such a bad argument. Even though it sounded like that's implausible. No, Amar Leh in. We could say that. Well, look, if something is fit for human consumption, so we humans, we get a little territorial about our food, meaning we're gonna eat it. We're not giving it to the animals. But if something is fit for animal consumption, easily we could reassign it for our consumption, meaning, look, I don't, the animals may want it, but I also want it. So this argument is not such a terrible argument. So again, fruit falling off the trees on Shabbos. So we have our first version, which is Ula's version, which is if the fruit are caught up on the top of the tree, Anshe Yericho say it's okay, we can climb the trees. It's not a problem. Now, again, who are they to say that? I don't know, but that's their argument. And the Chachamim say, no, you can't climb trees on Shabbos. Shema Yalaviyatlosh. In other words, the concern is you climb a tree, you're going to break off a branch. Fine. However, if the fruit falls to the base of the tree, according to Ula, everyone says you can get that fruit. Rava's question, what about Muksa? The Gemara says, nah, Muksa's not a problem. Why not? Because those fruit were set aside for ravens. And because they were set aside for ravens, even while attached to the tree, therefore it's not Muksa. That's version number one of the discussion. Now we're going to have version number two, provided to us by Reish Lakish. The machlokus between the Anshe Yericho and the Chachamim is when the fruit hit the ground, where Anshe Yericho say, good, not a problem, we don't have to climb a tree. The fruit's on the ground, what about Muksa? Not a Muksa issue. Because it's fit for animals, and therefore it's also going to be fit for us as well. Going into Shabbos, and the Chachamim say no. If the fruit hit the ground, it's Muksa. But if the fruit's up in the tree, everyone agrees, even Anshe Yericho agree, you can't climb the tree to get to the fruit. Yeah, so Nolad, right, you did read my mind. Nolad is a Muksa concept. So that's, in other words, when we're saying Muksa, Muksa and Nolad are really interchangeable terms. Nolad is a form of Muksa, because what's the idea of Nolad? It wasn't there before Shabbos, and now it's here. So yes, you can call the fruit falling off the trees Nolad. So what the Gemara is trying to argue now is that it's not Nolad / Muksa, because the ravens themselves could have eaten it before Shabbos. That's the, in other words, when the Gemara is sidestepping Muksa, it's also sidestepping Nolad. See, it's basically interchangeable terms. Yeah, so again, so the Anshe Yericho will say, yeah, that's what we're going to do. We're going to have a tool, shake it down, and the Chachamim say, yeah, but once you have to go up to the tree, or once you're right towards the top of the tree, so then there we have a Gzera. We have a Gzera intact, or Shema Yala
Vietlosh. But the thing is, it was definitely not for humans.
It was no lot for humans.
Because it was, you know, before Shabbat, it was...
Yeah, agreed. That, again, this argument of Yericho, it's a... You know, obviously it's one that the Chachamim don't buy into. Okay, and now finally up to Peah. We are on Nunvav Amud Beis. We are towards the bottom of the Amud. Nosim Peah LeYerek. They would take their vegetable garden and they would set aside a corner for the poor people. V'leisul Anshe Yericho did not. Now the Gemara says, okay, Anshe Yericho, right, you got to learn Masech Tepeah. In the first parak of Masech Tepeah, we're there, the Mishnah tells us very clearly which fruits and vegetables are subject, well, basically which fruits, you'll see in just a moment, vegetables, no, but which fruits are subject to the mitzvah of Peah and which are not. And as we'll see, Rashi already said this back in the Mishnah, we know the problem with Anshe Yericho is that once they're assigning something as Peah, they are basically stealing or taking away from the Levim and from the Kohanim. Because anything which is Peah is going to be tax-free. I mean tax-free, I mean truma-free, meister-free, and no longer subject to trumas and maestros. So now, all that produce which they set aside as payah, now the Levim and the Kohanim have a very legitimate argument. Wait a second. It's not obligated in payah, and you're taking away our trumas and maestros. Fine. So, first of all, let's learn this Mishnah together. It's a Mishnah in payah. Did not call Amru b'payah. Here's the rules of payah. Kol shehu. And these are I believe it's a list of five. Five things in order to make something qualify for payah. Number one, ochel. It has to be food. The nishmar. It has to be guarded, meaning owned by somebody. The gidulam on the arts has to grow from the ground. We'll talk about what doesn't grow from the ground. Velikita soka achas. And it has to be something which is harvested at one time, meaning certain fruits, grains, and produce aren't all harvested at once. It has to be the type of growth where it all get harvested together. And also, once you harvest it, it's got a shelf life. But if it's something that doesn't have a shelf life, so then it's not subject to the mitzvah of peah. Chayev bepeah, so then it's going to be obligated in peah. So kol shu ochel. So now we're going to go over each one of these criteria. Number one has to be a food. Prat l'sfiche sitim v'kotze. Sfiche sitim v'kotze, Rashi says, they're difficult to eat. You could chew on it, Rashi says. Kashal l'achila v'alsitim v'kotze shenim sfichim chazul l'achila sitim morike and krug. I don't know what they are exactly, how we're going to define them in English, but basically, things which, not really edible. So, v'nishmar prat lehefker. Nishmar has to be something which is owned by somebody, not hefker. V'gidulam an arts prat lekamemo pitrios. Mushrooms and truffles, they don't grow from the ground, right? They don't get the nourishment from the ground. Ulekitasan ka'achas, and harvested at the same time, pralatanim. Figs. Figs don't get all harvested at the same time. Figs develop sporadically on the tree, and so therefore, figs are not going to qualify for peah. Umachlis lekium pralayarek, and it has to have a shelf life, unlike vegetables. Vegetables have no shelf life. Right? You buy vegetables in the store, you go home. I mean, we put it in the fridge, right, to keep it, but if you didn't put it in the fridge, that's it. The salad, you keep out the salad for a little bit of time, it goes. So in other words, vegetables are not subject to peah. That's the Mishnah in peah. So the Gemara now makes the following suggestion. So again, Anshe Yericho took the vegetables and designated as peah. And the simple question is, you're not allowed to do that because it's not obligated in peah. And by doing so, you're removing Chumasamaisis from that vegetable. Which, as Hedy pointed out yesterday, the mitzvah of Chumas HaMaisos by vegetables is only a din derabanan, but nevertheless, it's a din derabanan.
Why couldn't they just make it heftier and then they can
take it? I'll come back. That's an excellent point. I'll come back to that point in just a moment. So, Hacha b'Rosh HaLiftos Haskinah Machtis HaLakiyam Ayidei Davar Acher Kamiflagi. So the Gemara says, we're talking about Rosh HaLiftos. We're talking, turnips, I think, is how we translate in English. And they're preservable. Now, they didn't have refrigeration 2,000 years ago, but they were still smart. What they did to preserve the vegetables, they just simply buried in the ground. You bury a vegetable in the ground, so it keeps it from going. Okay, how long, I don't know. But in other words, it does have a shelf life, albeit you have to manipulate it, but it does have a shelf life. So, and then the Gemara says it really is a legal argument between the Anshe Yericho and the Chachamim, where the Anshe Yericho say, look, it is preservable. Granted, you have to bury it in the ground, but that's called preservable. And the Chachamim say no. Preservable means that after I harvest it from the tree or from the ground, it'll keep without me having to do anything. That's machniso lekiyom, like fruit. But vegetables, however, who have no shelf life, and eat, and yes, you could put it in the ground, but when that's not the definition. The definition is as is. Can it last? It can't, therefore it's not obligated in peah. Tanu Rabbanan Brishon, how you know some peah lelefes lekruv. Originally they would give peah for the vegetables of lefes and kruv. Lefes, I think, is turnip, and kruv, cabbage. Okay, let's say cabbage. Rabbi Yossi omer af lekaplos. And Rabbi Yossi says, even for kaplot. Okay. Leeks, okay. Vitzni idach, we looked at another braisa, how you know some peah lelefes lekaplot. Rabbi Shimon omer af lekruv. And now we have another brisa, which is that we take payoff from the vegetables of lefen and kaplot, and not from, and Rabbi Shimon adds cabbage. Now, name a tlasa tanaihi havu. Now, the Gemara says, are we now in the middle of, is this a third opinion? So the Gemara says, no, trey tanai hava v'tanakama de Rabbi Shimon, haina Rabbi Yossi, v'tanakama de Rabbi Yossi, haina Rabbi Shimon. So the Gemara says that, no, there really are two opinions, meaning, whether or not peah comes from these two vegetables, there are really only two possibilities. Either it's going to be lefet and kruv, that's one shita, or it's going to be lefet and kaplet, that's another possibility. And even though it sounds like Rabbi Shimon is adding kruv to the two, in actuality, no, he's adding kruv to only one of those two. Umay af, the Gemara explains that that's exactly what it means. When it says af akamais, that's only going on the first of the list. So in other words, it's not lefet and kaplet, it's lefet and kruv. Fine. Okay, again, just a technical point in terms of whether there are two shitas, whether there's three shitas, but again, we do find Tanayim who are of the opinion that you can take payah off these vegetables, and again, like the members of Anshe Yericho, apparently they hold that because it's preservable by burying in the ground, therefore it's considered preservable. Tana Rabbana, we're on Nun Zayin Amud Aleph, we're three lines down from the top of the Amud. Ben, before I forget, I did promise you. It's a very simple question, meaning, okay, the problem with taking payoff vegetables is it's hefker. I'm one step ahead of myself. The problem is it's vegetables which are not obligated in payah. They set it aside as payah, and therefore it's exempt from chumas and maestros. And they're taking away from kohanim and levim. That's the problem. So Ben points out, Tosos asks the very question on the top of Nizayin Amud Aleph. Well, I understand, is this such a big deal? Meaning, they designate pay a corner of the field to the poor people. It therefore now becomes hefker. Okay, we know as a rule, anything which is hefker is exempt from chumas and maestros. Meaning, we're speaking here legally. There's no prohibition of making something hefker. So in other words, so good. So what they did is, they did take away from chumas and maestros, but they did so in a legal fashion. They just simply declared it hefker. So, really, if you think about it, the question really comes back to almost the beginning. What's the big deal of what they did? Tosfos asks this very question. Tosfos on the top of Nizayin Amud Aleph, Ela Mimnei She'amru Chachamim Ein Peah LeYer. V'im Tomer Mikol Makom Li Pater MiMaiser. Okay, when all said and done, it should be exempt from Maiser. Mimnei She'hifkirim V'hefker Pater MiMaiser. They did declare it ownerless. And we know anything ownerless is exempt from chumas and maestros. So Tosfos answers, well, this is not really hefker. Why? To Amri Maseches Peah, because again, going back to Masech Peah, second Mishnah we're doing today of Masech Peah, Eino hefker achi yufkar la'anim u'la'ashirim. Hefker has its own definition. Hefker means that I have to lay it ownerless for anybody. The definition of hefker is anybody can come onto my field and take. You see, that's not true by payah. And for that matter, any matnos aniyim. Any gifts to the poor, you have to qualify. Right? No different than, you know, modern example of food stamps. Meaning, not anyone can get food stamps. In other words, you have to qualify. You have to be poor. You have to be under the poverty line. So the same thing is true regarding payah. Payah is not hefker. Payah means poor people can come and take. But that's not a hefker. Hefker means it has to be declared ownerless to everybody. So that's why this is not really hefker. And that's why what they're doing now is they're taking away from levim, from Kohanim and Levim. Okay.
Well, we don't know if they're really mafid, but it takes
it to them. True, but in other words, by saying it's payah, they're basically saying only poor people can take it. Okay. Tanu Rabbanan. We're now Nizayin Amud Aleph, and we're now three lines down. Ben Bohayan, okay, a name which I cannot think of another place where we came up with this name, but where we have him. But Ben Bohayan asan peah leyerek. So the son of Bohayan. So what did he do? He had a garden field and he set aside a corner for the poor people. Uva aviv umatzalanim shayutunim yerek. So now dad comes to the field and dad sees that all the poor people are walking away with the vegetables, and v'omdim apesach hagina. And they're at the entrance of the garden, and they're ready to leave with all the vegetables that they collected from the corner. Now, dad knows what his son made a mistake. The kid made a mistake. In other words, like Anshe Yericho, right? The kid took off a corner of the field that is not really entitled to the poor people, and therefore all those fruits and vegetables are really chayv and chumas and maestros. And now they're walking off with the produce that's chayv and chumas and maestros.
Are they obligated to?
No. In other words, it's exactly the point. Meaning that that's right. That's exempt. So Amar Lahem. So he now. This is dad. The dad of this is actually Bo'ayon himself. So Amar Lahem Banai, my children. He's talking now to the poor people, because basically what he's about to do is he's about to take away their vegetables. So speaking nicely to them, Banai, my children. He shlichu me'aleichem. Put everything down, v'ani nosen lachem kiflayim b'meusar, and I'll give you double of what you just put down, and mu'usar, meaning of produce that I already took off trumas ha'maisros. Okay, so in other words, I realize that you need it. You're in a state of life where you need it. Put it down. I'll give you double of what you just had. Lo mimnei she'ein itzara. I'm sorry. Right. She'ein itzara. Ela mimnei she'amru chachamim ein nostem pe'el yerek. And it's not because I'm cheap. It's just because the chachamim say that you don't take off a corner of the field to the poor for reasons we explained already. So therefore, just simply put it down, and I'll reimburse you. And not only will I reimburse you, I'll give you double. And the reason why he said, not because I'm cheap, is because he doesn't want them to think I'm just pushing them away. In other words, he was trying to speak softly to them, calmly to them, so that they understand that he's not taking away from them. It's a halachic consideration. Tana Rabbanan. Now, from here until the end of the parak, we only have a little bit more to go, which is good because we only have a little bit of time left. From here until the end of the parak, I don't know what's happening. Meaning, we're going to go through the Gemara together, and I'm going to explain, but contextually why it's here. So a little bit unclear. But basically, we're going to go over other inappropriate behaviors of various people throughout. We're going to focus mostly on the Second Temple period. Of people. In other words, we just spent the Mishnah talking about Anshe Yericho. Anshe Yericho behaved inappropriately. We talked a little bit about Chizkiyahu HaMelech, who to a certain degree behaved inappropriately. And so now we're just gonna throw out there other Tosefta, the other brises of other people behaving inappropriately, but nothing necessarily connected to what we've been talking about. Tanu Rabbanan, we learned in the Tosefta, Berishona Hayu Manichim Oros Kachim Belishkas Beis HaParva. They would leave the hides of kachim. We know the halacha is like this. By carbon tamid, or any ola for that matter, so the entire animal is burnt on the top of the mizbeach. Except for the hides. The hides of those animals are kept and enjoyed by the kohanim who are doing the avoda. Which of those kohanim get it? Whoever gets there first. So, I'm sorry, of those kohanim who are installed in that week and doing the avoda that week, of that mishmar. So, kachim belishkas beis aparva la'erev hayu machalken osam lanche beis av. They were divided to the beis av. Those are the people who were working that day in the beis hamikdash. Vayu bala izroos not limosam bizroa. The stronger kohanim would get it. Okay, because they're stronger. Okay, that's how life usually works. So what they would do is they would basically hold all the hides on reserve for the end of the week. Because remember, the way the system was is that you had a mishmar working for an entire week. So now they would hold it to the end of the week. By the end of the week now, all the members of the mishmar would be there. But basically, the same problem would result. The bigger kohanim, the stronger kohanim, would take first. Amdu balim. So now, basically, here's the problem. It's a problem of allocation. In other words, we can't equitably distribute the hides of the kohanim. The hides of the karbanos. So there's a problem of equitable distribution. So sometimes the resolution which is reached it is if not everybody can get it, so therefore nobody can get it. I know it doesn't sound like a democratic way, but okay, nobody's going to get it. So amdu balam vehikdishim l'shamayim. So along comes the owners. The owners say, you know what? The hides belong to the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, fine. So in other words, if the Kohanim can't figure out a way, huh? Yeah, sure. Yes and no. Meaning it's not theirs per se, right? It's not theirs per se. So you have to have an owner that can do it. Maybe they did it before Hektesh. Okay. You know what? You're raising a good issue, and I don't have a good answer right now. So they dedicated the hides, but obviously they did it. I mean, the Bryce is describing it. So they dedicated the hides to the Beis HaMikdash. So, and now what they did is, with all the hides that belong to the Beis HaMikdash, now what's the Beis HaMikdash care about hides? What they're going to do is they're going to sell it, and the proceeds are going to go to the Beis HaMikdash. And that's exactly what they did, and the money that they started earning based on the hides, they transferred over to gold, and they took the gold and they plated the entire Heichal with that gold. And right, betabloshel amal amakovid dinar. I mean, talking about, you know, now I know nowadays, like, you know, very large marble is in, so it's not new. It's not a new idea. They had marbles made out of gold, right? Tiling made out of gold, right? An amma by an amma with the thickness of kaove dinar zahav v'laregel hayumakpil nasom anichnasol agav mala barabayis. And on yontif, what they would do, put on display. Not the first time that we've seen something like this, where the Beis HaMikdash puts something on display for the Jewish people to see during Yontif, so that the Jewish people can see how beautiful the Beis HaMikdash is. Kidei sheyu ol regalim ra'om shemalachtam na'eh ve'ein behem delem. There's no imperfection in the construction of the Beis HaMikdash. And so, okay, that's one incident. Tana. We learned in another Tosefta. Abashal Omer Koroshal Shikma Yubiricho. Okay, and there were sycamore trees in the city of Yericho. It's kind of like, this is like the backdrop to our Mishnah. Vayubale Zoros Notlana Sambazroa. And these sycamore trees, basically, again, same basic problem. The strong people would take the sycamore trees for themselves. Amdubalim Behikdishim Lashamayim. So what the owners of the sycamore trees did is, enough is enough. They dedicated the trees to Shamayim. In other words, they basically said, this is now property of the Beis HaMikdash. And the idea is, it's so interesting. The idea is that in terms of general theft, like, you know, they didn't care. Oh, it belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. Oh, now we care. In other words, but again, though, I've been enough to see, people are like that, meaning, you know, general thievery, oh no. But the shul and, you know, that we can't steal from. So, v'chol kayotz behem. Amar Abishol ben Bitnis mishum Abba Yosef ben Chanin oilo mi beis baitus. The woe from us, from the beis baitus. Basically, now the we're going to be describing various Kohanim who were just simply did not behave properly. Woe to us from the members of the house of Baitus, or Lima Alasan. They had clubs, right? The things that they used to beat people over the heads with. Oilomi Beis Chanin, Oilomi Lechishasam. Members of the family of Chanin. So they would whisper a lot, meaning they would say Lashon Hara. Oilomi Beis Katros, Oilomi Kumosan. Woe from the members of the house of Kutrus and their pens. So in other words, they would also malign, but doing so with the pen. Oilu mi Beis Yishmael ben Piachi, oilu mi Egrofan, another family of Kohanim who had big fists, again, intimidation. Shem Kohanim Gedolim uvenehem Gizbarim. Now they took the positions of Kohen Gadol. Their sons were the COO, v'chasnem Amar Kalin, and their son-in-laws were the CEO. Okay, in other words, basically they took every position in the Beis HaMikdash. The Avdeim choftim esa'am, and their servants would beat the people b'maklos with sticks. Okay, so again, just a description of very corrupt Kohanim, and again, this is all during the Second Temple period. Tana Rabbanan Arba Tzvachu Savcha Azara. The courtyard cried out four cries. Okay, the courtyard is an inanimate object, so we're envisioning over here, it's probably a bas kol that comes up and makes the following declaration. And again, this is during by Cheney. This is during Second Temple period. Rishon Tzal Mikam Bnei Eli Shetimo Hechel Hashem. So the first cry goes out to Bnei Eli. Now Bnei Eli, it's kind of, and it's anachronistic. It's we're really historically out of whack over here, because Bnei Eli goes back to the times of Eli and the sons of Eli, and we're talking about the Shiloh period, where there was no Beis HaMikdash. Just, in other words, it goes back not only one Beis HaMikdash ago, but before that, even to the time of Shiloh, where the Bnei Eli, they write the Gemara and Shabbos. Rashi quotes the Gemara and Shabbos. No. Okay, but anyway, the Gemara and Shabbos tells us that what they did is very inappropriate behavior regarding the women. What exactly they did with the women, the Gemara and Shabbos discusses, but okay. Okay, second cry of the bas kol in the Azara was towards specifically one individual. His name was Yisachar Ishkfar Barkai, Shemechabed Esasma Mechalka, Sheshemaim David Krich Gadei Bishirae Ve'Aved Avoda. When he would do the Avoda, he was obviously a Kohen. When he would do the Avoda, it would wrap his hands in silk. He didn't want to get his hands dirty. Okay? And we're going to see as we begin the fifth parak of Pesachim tomorrow, we're going to see over the next couple of months, meaning Kohanim prided themselves in basically in blood. Meaning part of doing the avodah is getting your hands dirty with blood. And on top of that, there's also a halachic issue, which is there can be no chatzitza between your hand and that which and the avodah which you're doing. Okay? And so he wrapped his hands up. The third cry of the Azara was an invitation to Yishmael ben Piachi. Now, why is that a cry? Meaning that's a good thing. He's inviting him to come in. So Rashi points out the rest of his family was not good. Right? Kasher hayava anshe beso hayubale zroa. So the rest of his family were all corrupt. So basically, it's a cry, and instead of accentuating the negative, it's just basically here's one good member of the family. The rest of them are not good. And finally, this is now the fourth cry of the Azara. Seusha v'mashechem yikanes Yochanan ben Narbai tamidushal pinkai. In should come in Yochanan ben Narbai, who was a student of Pinkai. V'yamalei kresim b'katshei shamayim, and let him eat katshei shamayim. And again, I guess it's the same basic idea, meaning he could come in, but not the rest of his family. Amru alav al Yochanan ben Narbai. Now on this last kohen that we just discussed, shaya ochel gimel me'as agalim, he had a great appetite. And now the Gemara is saying this in a positive way, in a negative way, I'm not particularly sure, but he had a huge appetite. He would eat 300 calves, v'shos gimel me'as garbi yayin, and he would drink 300 barrels of wine. You know the 300 number. Whenever you see it, it should alert you that this may be a guzma, this may be an exaggeration. 300 is usually the number that the Gemara describes when it wants to describe exaggeration. V'ochel arbaim sa'a gozlos b'kinuach, and as dessert, for dessert, he ate 40 sa'a of birds. It's an enormous amount. B'kinuach ze'uda, amru kol yamav shal Yochanan arbay lo nimsa noza b'migdash. Now it sounds from this last statement that the Gemara is saying this positively. We never found nosar. There was never any leftover. Meaning, because we know that when there's carbon, so the last thing we want, which happens, is nosar, is leftover. What do we do with the nosar? With the leftover, it has to be burnt. Because he had such a wonderful appetite, there was no nosar left over. My salka baby isacha ish kfar barkai. And the Gemara, this is like now the epilogue of the of these Gemaras. What happened to Yisacha ish kfar barkai? Remember, he was the one who wrapped his hands in silk when he did the avoda. Right, showed tremendous disrespect to the avoda by doing so. So Amri Malko Makas Avi Asfe. So the Gemara tells us like the epilogue to the story. The king and the queen were sitting down. Who exactly they were? The Gemara doesn't identify. Rashi says they were members of the Beis Chashmonai, which we know they're the heroes of the Hanukkah story, but then they became corrupt. The Ramban, you can take a look at the Ramban and Chumash, who discusses how corrupt they become. Rashi says that's the king and queen in question over here. Malka Amar Gidye Ya'i. Now the king said goats are the best in terms of eating. Umalka Sa'amre Imre Ya'i. And the queen said, no, the sheep is the best. So Amru Man Muchach Kohen Gadol Dekam Masi Karbanas Kol Yuma. So who can really resolve this issue? The Kohen Gadol. Because he's dealing in Karbanas all day, and he goats and sheep, and he'll know the answer. Asa Iyu. We're now on the top of Nizayin Amid Beis. Achve Biyadei. So they bring in this Kohen, this Yisachar, and the first thing he starts off with is he gives some sort of hand gesture to the king and the queen. Now, we don't know what the hand gesture is, but if I say hand gesture, you can only imagine, probably not a good hand gesture. So he says, you know, the goat is brought in as a carbon tamid. A goat. So hovelo havale. I'm sorry. So that was his response. It was a disparaging response. He didn't take the king and queen seriously, and worse than that, he didn't take the carbono seriously. In other words, because he started off with like a hand gesture. Amar Malka hovelo havale a masa de machusa nifsiku liyamine. So this Kohen has no, he showed contempt to the king and the queen. He started off with a hand gesture. So, you know what? Let's chop off his hands. Okay, it sounds like fair punishment. And not just chop off his hands, but chop off his right hand. And you understand the significance, meaning he's a Kohen, it's that right hand which he's doing the Avodah with, but chop it off. And you understand the Midah Keneged Midah, meaning, because remember, what was his affront to Kadosh Baruch Hu? He refused to do the Avodah with his hands. He would wrap up his hands. So you're right, you see the Midah Keneged Midah in operation over here. Yahav Shochad Upaske L'smalei. Now, what he did to the executioner, not the executioner, but the one who was giving the punishment, is he bribed him a little bit. And so, with that bribe, instead of having his right hand chopped off, so he only had his left hand chopped off. Okay. Doesn't sound like such a great briber. And not only was he not a great briber, but worse than that, though, he couldn't keep a secret. Shama Malka, the king heard, Upaske Liyamine. And as a result of that, now his right hand got chopped off as well. I'm Rav Yosef Brich, Rachman Da'ashkali Yisachish Kfar Barkai, Limitra Fise Mine Bahayama. Right? Thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he got punished in this world. Okay? And just a simple idea that, that in other words, whatever punishment's in store for him in the next world, he received in this world. Or it could also be that it was an education moment for all the other Kohanim. Either way. So first of all, he didn't even learn Mishnayos, this Kohen Yisachar. That if you look in the Torah, you're going to find that the keves, the sheep, comes before the goat everywhere. I might have thought, meaning every time you see in the Torah, it says first sheep and then goat. I might have thought, because sheep is better. So it writes like one of the last Mishnayos in Krisos. The Mishnah over there says, no, they're the same. They're equivalent. Meaning there is no better. Goat and sheep as a carbon are equivalent. Ravina amar filo mikra namelo kra dechsiv im keves im eiz. Just read a pasuk and you'll know that they're equivalent. The Torah says, im keves im eiz, I bai keves lysi, I bai eiz lysi. You want to bring sheep, you can bring it. You want to bring goat, you can bring it. There's no difference. Meaning the Torah also treats him with equivalency. The fact that Yisachar didn't know that they're equivalent and he gave an answer, so again, shows that not only was he disrespectful, he was also ignorant as well. Okay. Strange way to end the perek, but so the perek ends.